Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Kia ora and welcome to the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast. I am your host, Jordan. I am mum to two beautiful little boys, Jai and Ali. I also host the Your Birth Project online hypnobirthing course and the Mini Kiwis First Aid course for parents of under 5-year-olds. And I have an online store attached to Your Birth Project, which encompasses everything pregnancy, birth, and postpartum related. So just absolutely love that side of the business. I'm also a very, very passionate storyteller and a lover of all things birth. So hence why I am leading you on this podcast. I'm not an advocate for any particular type of birth or model of birth care. I am simply here to hold space for this platform for you to share your beautiful stories with us all. You'll hear stories of joy, of heartbreak, of love, of loss, and each family has a different experience to share. I'm trying to bring to light stories that we often only tell in the darkest of places or to our closest of friends, but really are so important for everybody to hear. So I hope that you love the podcast of these beautiful families all over Aotearoa, and I will let you jump into the podcast now. Enjoy. This week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales is brought to you by Your Birth Project, and Your Birth Project is my online hypnobirthing course designed to help you create your best birth. There is sections in there that covers everything from comfort methods to the labor and birth process to birth partners and how they can support you. There's a specific video for them. It has absolutely everything you need to create your best birth. Doesn't matter if you want to have a home birth, a hospital birth, an elective cesarean, you want to have drugs, no drugs, you want to have your mum there, not your mum there. It doesn't matter what kind of birth you want to have. Your Birth Project is the inclusive hypnobirthing course that you need to create your best birth. So make sure you go and check it out at Your Birth Project on Instagram or www.yourbirthproject.com. In today's episode, I am speaking with Claude, and the beautiful Claude takes us through her pregnancy and birth story with daughter Elodie, and she talks us through a PCOS diagnosis in 2020, which led her down a bit of a path of nutrition and lifestyle and sort of supporting her body in the best way that she can. And then she talks us through actually falling pregnant and having a missed miscarriage, which is how they explained it at the time, what that experience was like, using letrozole for a couple of rounds to then fall pregnant with Elodie and into her pregnancy journey with Elodie. So we talk through all different types of things in pregnancy. She had a planned home birth as a first-time mum, so we talk through how she made that decision, what her home birth was like. She ended up pushing for 2.5 hours, which is a pretty lengthy time to be pushing, so we talk through that, and an eventual episiotomy to help little Elodie into the world. So I know you're going to love this episode. Claude does such a good job of explaining everything, so I'm super grateful that she was willing to join me, and I can't wait to hear feedback. So make sure you flick me a message on KiwiBirthTales or KiwiBirthTales@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Another reminder, this episode is sponsored by Your Birth Project. Go and check it out if you're pregnant. It is everything you need to create your best birth. Let's jump into the episode. Hey, Claude. Thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Hi, Jordan. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited about this.
No worries. Would you like to tell the listeners a little bit about you and who is in your family?
Yep. So, yeah, my name's Claudia. Claude is what I tend to go by. I've got my partner, Quinn. We are down in the Hawke's Bay. I'm from Auckland, but I moved down here a couple of years ago after doing long distance with Quinn. And we have our two border collies, Jax and Lila, and recently we've just added little Elodie, who's almost 8 weeks old. So yeah, our baby girl just joined the family.
Oh my gosh, 8 weeks has gone so fast. I remember when I saw you post that she had arrived, and it feels like it was only like a week ago. It's crazy.
I know, like each week that goes by, I'm like, what the hell? How have we got to this point? But then also the birth as well feels like it was ages ago. Like it's, gosh, both times, it's just crazy.
That is crazy. Awesome. And do you want to talk us through what the journey to pregnancy was like for you and Quinn?
Yeah, sure. So our journey started back in early 2021 when I just moved down here. I can backtrack a little bit, but in 2020 I was diagnosed with polycystic ovary syndrome. So that was early 2020. I had been going on my own little personal journey of trying to figure out what PCOS was and how I could kind of help myself. And I always knew that my end goal was I wanted to be fit for pregnancy. Like that was always really what I wanted to do. So, and I'd been to a GP and I left pretty disappointed. And then anything you search for online is pretty overwhelming. And I ended up reaching out to a lady who's a nutritionist in Christchurch. Her name's Sarah at Your Monthly. And she was just amazing. She specialized in hormonal health. And we started a journey of trying to help myself through my diet and supplements and just general life changes. And that was all going really, really well. However, though, in that time was when I met Quinn and going into a new relationship, and I wasn't on any contraception. It was kind of a bit of like, a, oh no, like this is dangerous territory. So I went and got the Mirena. And then I didn't mind the Mirena. I mean, it was fit for purpose, but it completely stopped my periods while I was on it. And while I was working with this nutritionist, it was kind of about counterproductive to be doing all this work and not being able to actually like see the results, like not being able to see if it was helping regulate and normalize my periods. So stayed on the Mirena, and Quinn was really supportive and really great with all of it. But when we made the call to move down, well, for me to move down to Hawke's Bay, which was in January of 21, we did talk about I kind of said to him, how would you feel if I wasn't on contraception and we just be really careful, use all the other things that, you know, and yeah, just said like, would you be okay if I wasn't on contraception? How would we go about that? And he was fully supportive, but he's very into his health, and so he completely understood like why it was important to me, and yeah, just wanted to do what he could. And then it kind of just became this like, obviously not being on contraception, and it was just kind of in the back of your mind always, like, oh shit, like, am I, oh, sorry, probably can't swear.
You're fine.
It was kind of always in the back of your mind, like, oh, hey, don't want to get pregnant. It's like, don't get pregnant, don't get pregnant. And we'd always make, not like, just make comments about it. And then it was after a few months of that, we just kind of started thinking, like, well, actually, maybe we do want this. Like, we hadn't been together like very long, but we really knew that we wanted to be together, and we knew that we were in a position where we could start a family. And so yeah, it just became this idea, like, let's maybe actually look into this. And so then we started actively trying and tracking it and doing all that, and nothing really happened. And I remember speaking to my nutritionist, and she said to me, well, you could keep going down this natural approach, like how we're doing it. But if you do almost want to speed things up a little bit, you could go to a gynecologist and they might be able to help you out. So we had this appointment booked with the gynecologist for, I mean, it was about April, end of April in 21. And I felt a little bit funny going before, like leading into that appointment. I felt a bit nauseous and just a bit off, and like my period hadn't come in a while, but that wasn't really a surprise. I was quite used to that. And we were in this appointment and talking about the medication that I could be put on, which was letrozole. And he said at the end of it, like, yes, I think we can get you on this medication, just based on the fact I had been off contraception for a while. Nothing had happened. I had had bloods leading up to that to kind of see what was happening with my hormones, and it still suggested there wasn't any ovulation. And then the final stage of it, he's like, well, let's just give you an ultrasound and we'll just check how everything's going down there and like what the situation is. And he was going along and did all that, did the internal ultrasound. And then there was this black, I now know it was like a black sack that was on the screen. And I didn't really think anything of it, but Quinn apparently like instantly was like, what? And the gynecologist looked at us and just said, like, I think this is what you want to see. And we're like, what? And then he's like, oh, you're pregnant. And so found out then that we were pregnant, but he did sound a little bit unsure at the time. And he started measuring things and he was just a bit silent. And Quinn and I, like, weren't even looking at each other. We were just looking at the screen, like, what is happening? Mm-hmm. And I kind of felt in the back of my head, like, something's not right. Like, this doesn't feel, like, just almost felt too good to be true. Mm-hmm. And then he said, well, like, judging off the size of it, the sack, he's like, this looks like you'd be about 7 to 9 weeks along and I can't find a heartbeat. Yeah. So then it was very quickly like, okay. But I didn't really know what to do. I wasn't really sure what I was looking at. So it was a bit confusing. Long story short, he sent us for lots of bloods after that and more ultrasounds. And it wasn't until about 3 or 4 weeks later that they finally felt like they could tell us, like, okay, yes, you, I had a, was it like a missed miscarriage?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it wasn't until then, like, it honestly took so long for them to tell us that was the case. And there were so many ultrasounds and so many blood tests and so many tears. Like, I just felt like, I mean, I know we never really saw the baby and we really only thought I was pregnant for like half an hour before finding out it was a potential miscarriage. But it just felt, it was just a whirlwind and felt, it was really, really upsetting. And then, so we had all that. I had the medication to bring on the miscarriage. And then the gynecologist said, well, this does mean like you can get pregnant. So why don't you just keep going with what you're doing? Give yourself a few months. We'll test each month to see how your ovulation is going. And if things just aren't going right again, like we can look at the medication, we can look at putting you on letrozole again. So I was like, okay. That was in May when we finally miscarried that first pregnancy. And then after 3 months, again, there was just no ovulation. We kept doing the like 21-day progesterone blood test and nothing was happening. And so we just said, like, can we please have the medication? And he was happy to give it to us. So that was in August we started taking it. And then on our third round in October, we managed to conceive Elodie, which was really, really exciting.
Yeah, amazing. And did you find out that you were pregnant because you were, like, tracking or you had to test on certain days taking the letrozole, or what happened there?
So I was tracking everything, like, mad. I had that app, Flow, where I was tracking every little symptom that I had. I was also doing the, what are they called, the Clear Blue ovulation test. I had the digital one, which I liked doing that because, I don't know, it was kind of exciting as well. You see the little smiling face when you were ovulating. And so it was, the first two rounds, I was doing those ovulation tests and it kept coming up like I was ovulating on day 17 pretty much both times. Then I would do a day 21 blood test and that confirmed that I had ovulated. Then it would be like this excited and wait to see, oh, had I got pregnant? And those first two rounds, I had not. The third round, funnily enough, I think I'd lost like a little bit of hope. I just decided, like, let's not get too caught up on this. And I had done the ovulation test, but maybe I didn't do them right that month or something, but it never pulled up saying that I'd ovulated. And so I just felt deflated. I was like, oh, this is horrible. Like, the letrozole medication did have quite minor side effects, but you got quite bad, like headaches and body aches doing it. And it seemed to get hard. Like, it took more of a toll on your body with each cycle you took it. And I knew after my third round, I was like, oh, I just don't want to keep doing this. Like, I knew that after my third round, they would be upping my dosage. So I thought I just felt really deflated. And so I hadn't really thought much of it when it had been probably about 4 weeks since the start of my cycle. And Quinn was out jet boating, one of his many hobbies. And I was just sitting there in the weekend, I thought, like, oh, I actually feel a little bit nauseous. And I was like, this is a bit strange. And then I kind of looked at my app and I was like, oh, yeah, like I would probably be having my period about now. And so I was like, oh, I'll just go upstairs. And like, I think I had one pregnancy test left. So many that I had originally stocked up on. And then I just went in, did that and peed on it. And straight away, these lines came up and I was just shocked. I remember I like, part of me wanted to cry and then the other part, like no emotion could come out at all. I was just completely shocked by it all. And I thought, like, oh, I wanted to call somebody. I really wanted to tell someone. Quinn was, like, Quinn being up the river, there was no service there. So I was like, well, I can't call him. And then I think the first person I called was just, like, the one midwife. The midwife who had helped us through the miscarriage. I called her straight away and was just like, just because I needed to tell somebody. And so then from that on, I was like, okay, well, I think she's my midwife now. So, yeah. But there wasn't too much. Yeah. It was really just missed periods and the nauseousness.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing. How exciting. And how did you tell Quinn? Did you tell him as soon as he got home or what happened there?
Yeah, I had all these plans. I was like, I always thought that I would just be the type to set up the camera and like do this cool reveal to him. And I really wanted to go get more pregnancy tests. Because I wanted to, yeah, I just wanted to keep peeing on them to make sure, like, this is for real. But I only had the one, and I was like, well, this could, maybe something's gone wrong here, and it's giving me a false positive. So I wanted to go get all these other tests, but then I just didn't. I think I was just in shock. And then Quinn came home, and I was probably acting a little bit funny. And I had set up my camera, but then I got a bit awkward, and I was like, no, he's going to see it. Like, I don't even know what I'm doing. And then I was like, I don't even have a cool plan of how I'm going to tell him, so it's not even going to look good anyway. And then I think he was in the kitchen just making a sandwich and I literally just went up behind him and like tapped him on the shoulder and he didn't even turn around. So I had to like tap him a few more times and then finally turned around and I was just holding this positive test and he looked at it really confused and he thought it was another ovulation test. So he just looked and he goes, oh, are you ovulating again? And I was like, no, it's a pregnancy test. And he was just equally as shocked and he just picked me up and we had a little moment and yeah, so it wasn't really the big romantic exciting reveal that I'd hoped for, but I mean it's the job.
yeah no, it's funny how often I think that happens because it's just such a like holy shit moment. Yeah amazing. And how were you feeling in that first trimester? Did you get like many pregnancy symptoms in those first first few weeks or what happened there?
So I did feel, I remember between, I took the pregnancy test on when I was, it would have been 4 weeks and 2 days. And I remember I was feeling nauseous up until around 6 weeks. So 4 to 6 weeks was definitely really nauseous. I had all these food aversions. I didn't want to eat anything that I had made myself. So I was constantly like buying food.
Yeah.
And then I think we had our first midwife appointment at like the 7 week mark. And by that point, I honestly just felt normal. And I should say as well, this whole time every day I'm like Googling everything, like any little thing that I felt. If I didn't feel anything at all, I was kind of like, oh, I definitely had the fear of miscarrying again.
Yeah.
So that was always kind of forefront of my mind. And when my symptoms stopped at that 6 week mark, I was kind of like, this isn't right. And I was Googling that being like, 6 weeks pregnancy symptoms stopped, like what's wrong, blah, 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 and you read every single positive and negative stories. And when we got, oh, I'm sorry if you can hear Elodie crying in the background, my mum's got her. And then at our 7 week midwife appointment, we had we had the scan and there was a little heartbeat. So that was amazing to see. That was like the first step that I really just wanted to get past. But we then met with the midwife after that and she told me the heart rate was a little bit lower than what they had expected. And then she went through that and I had asked a few questions and my last question was, I had a lot of symptoms between 4 to 6 weeks and they've kind of stopped now. Like, is that normal? And then her face just completely dropped and she looked at me. I should also add in that this midwife is really hard. Like, she's a very straight woman. I already knew this about her. Like, there's no fluffiness to her.
Yeah.
And she looked at me and her face just dropped and she's like, oh, no, that's not good. And so I was like, oh. And I remember both of our hearts just, like, sunk hearing that. And she then started going, okay, well, we're going to you go get these blood tests now and we're going to do more blood tests in a couple of days. And then our whole conversation just ended on what we would need to do to prepare for a miscarriage if that was to happen. So that was really upsetting. We left that appointment like with the photos of this little fetus with a little heartbeat, and then we both were like, well, we wanted to tell family, but because we just had that conversation, it was kind of like, well, let's not tell them yet because we don't know what's going to happen. And I did those blood tests in the afternoon, and fortunately she called me back a few hours later and she said, no, your blood's actually look fine, like, don't be concerned about this. And so, yeah, we went and told everybody after that. After that, though, my symptoms kind of just come, they just came and went like that. Where sometimes I'd feel nauseous, sometimes I wouldn't. There wasn't really too much else going on. It was just that, which, again, was a blessing that I felt quite all right that first trimester. But then there's also, like, you'd wake up and be like, oh, I don't feel anything at all. Like, is this still viable? And, yeah, so it really just plays on your mind. It was almost would have been nice to have just felt sick every day for a little bit.
Yeah, I think there's probably so many people that can relate to you saying that who've experienced a pregnancy loss or are just generally anxious about pregnancy loss and sort of worrying if you're not feeling the typical pregnancy symptoms that you hear of in that first trimester. I think, yeah, there'll be so many people that can relate to that.
Yeah, definitely. And I know, like, everyone, I know when I went through the first miscarriage, you realise, like, a lot of people don't talk about it. And so you try to bring a little bit of light to miscarriage and a little bit of awareness to it. But then I also think, and I've talked to a few people about this, that sometimes that can make people feel more worried. It's like when you talk about miscarriage and you talk about how common it actually is, that makes people more worried knowing that it actually is a really common thing. Like, it's a little bit of both things. But
For sure. And so what happened from there? Did you do all of the sort of standard testing that's offered to you in pregnancy? And did you want to find out the sex of your baby? Yeah, talk us through that.
Yeah, we did. We definitely wanted to find out the gender. We did the NIPS test at 10 weeks. So we find out the gender that way. And we did a reveal, I think, when I was about 14 weeks along. And yeah, we did all the other tests that were offered to us, just like the ultrasounds that you get and scans, and then we did the gestational diabetes one as well.
Yeah, awesome, cool. And did you do a gender reveal or did you just do something with you and Quinn?
No, we did a gender reveal. I had this plan, I don't know if you know, there's an influencer over in Australia called Sarah's Day. In her first pregnancy, she did this reveal where there was about like 20 balloons.
Oh, and, yes, I have seen that. I remember watching that YouTube video.
And it was like, because say she had a boy, and so there was three blue balloons and two pink, and then the rest of them were blanks.
Yeah.
And I wanted to do that. And so I, Quinn's brother's partner, Ellie, so my semi-sister-in-law, she was the one who we passed on the gender to, the little envelope. And so she set it up for us. And I think we had about 30 balloons to make sure everyone got a chance to pop a balloon. And in the end, there was four pink and three blue, but all the blank balloons had confetti in them as well. Like, they had gold confetti or something, and then the pink and blue confetti in the other ones. And as more balloons got popped, it started actually getting really confusing, and the gold and the blank balloons started reflecting other colours.
Oh, like, no.
So it would just became a bit of a mess. Like, you'd pop a balloon and then everyone would just be staring at it going, what colour was that? Like, And so we got to a point where we thought there was four blue, and because there was one balloon that was just very confusing and everyone thought it was a blue and it wasn't. And so we started hugging and we were like, yay, it's a boy, it's a boy. And then you look over at Ellie And she's just like shaking her head and going, no, 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 like keep going, keep going. And
Oh,
so then
no.
it was like, what? And I just grabbed the pin and just started going like crazy on all the balloons and popped all of the remaining ones. And then we saw that it was a girl. And yeah, it was very exciting. When we did the gender reveal, it was more of a confirming to me that we were having a boy. I was dead set thinking we were having a boy. A girl was a huge shock.
Oh, amazing. Cool. And I guess just jumping back really quickly, I know when you said that you got the bloods and then you told like your family and stuff that you were pregnant, when did you announce your pregnancy like to friends, and did you announce it on social media, and how did you approach that?
We told our like parents and grandparents and like brothers and sisters. We told them it's pretty much at that 7 week mark after we had the first, after we'd seen the heartbeat and the bloods confirmed that things were still kind of ticking along. And then we did an announcement on social media. I think it must have been around like just over 12 weeks. At the point that we thought was like that semi like safe mark.
Oh, very cool. And did you do like any antenatal classes or birth education, or what were you doing in terms of learning about labour and birth?
So we did the antenatal classes down here. I was always kind of a little background thing. Making friends when you're an adult is really hard. And so moving down to Hawke's Bay, I always thought that making friends was going to be like a really easy thing, and it was not. And so I was kind of really hoping, I'm like, oh, I hope I can make some friends like at this antenatal classes and like people who are on similar journeys to you. And so, we definitely did the antenatal classes, and they were awesome. Yeah. But I kind of did my own research throughout the entire pregnancy. And I'm quite a person, like when I get my mind set on something, I like to know everything I can about it. So I was doing a lot. I read the book. I was at Ina May Gaskins. I can't remember what it's called. But her childbirth book.
Guide to Childbirth.
Yep. Yes, that's the one. And then I listened to all of your podcasts. I'd actually been listening to you since before I even wanted to be pregnant. Just always kind of been fascinated with everything birth. I honestly went through all of your ones. So then I moved on to the Australian side, and I listened to Australian Birth Stories and their podcast, Positive Birth Australia.
Yep.
So I listened to all of those. And then just kind of ongoing research. Did a lot of meditations and, I suppose that's actually another thing. But I was doing a lot of research. The other ones were on YouTube with like Built to Birth.
Yeah,
I can't remember what, Bridget Tyler. Yeah, she was amazing too. I did your hypnobirthing course, which was amazing. That was huge when it came to my actual labour. So when we got to the antenatal classes, I honestly felt like I kind of knew lots of it myself, which was nice. I think knowledge is power, and I definitely wanted to have power in my birth, and I definitely knew I needed to know a lot of things to before going into it to prepare myself.
I think it's so nice as well if you can like use those antenatal classes as a build on things that you've already learned. That's what I love when I get messages from people about your birth project and they're like, oh, I did the course and then I went to my antenatal and I felt like I could already identify a lot of what they were talking about. So I think that's definitely relatable for sure.
Absolutely. Otherwise it could be such a shock. And now it's quite a common thing where people just like want to go with the flow with their birth, and that's totally fine. But it did amaze me like how many people really didn't know much about birth.
You can go with the flow and still be like, have a really good understanding of the labour and birth process though, right?
Yeah.
For sure. I agree with that.
Otherwise it would come as a very big shock.
Absolutely. Awesome. And did all of this sort of birth education and like learning that you were doing give you an idea around what you wanted your birth to be like? Did you have a plan? Where did you want to give birth? What did that look like for you?
Yeah, so the further along I got into my birth, so when I, well, backtrack, when I had called my midwife at the very beginning and got her on board as being my midwife for my pregnancy. I hadn't actually done any research prior to that. I hadn't looked at any other midwives and what I wanted, because I hadn't started looking into birth in that detail yet. I didn't know what I wanted out of my birth. I didn't know what to look for in a midwife. And I knew that this midwife was really onto it. When I'd gone through the miscarriage, she made things happen really quickly and was really reliable. Yeah. So when I went with her, she was great for the first part of the pregnancy. And the more I started researching into pregnancy and birth and what I wanted out of it, I started realizing, like, I want to do a natural physiological birth. And I did know that my current midwife was very, she specialized in high risk pregnancies and was very medical. And I had heard stories that she was one to intervene, like, quite often in a labor if something wasn't quite going the way that it should. And it wasn't until I, when they announced that you could have more than one person in a hospital birth in Hawke's Bay at the hospital here, I started thinking, okay, well, like, if now I can have an extra person, who would I have? And through listening to all my podcasts, mostly the Australian and some like American ones, I had learned about the role of a doula, so a like birth support person, and then I thought that was something amazing. Like, I thought that was amazing, and that's definitely a role a person I would love to have at my birth. So I started researching into if there were any doulas in Hawke's Bay, and I found this one lady, Jess, who was lucky for me, offering a free service as a birth doula, because she was in her final qualifications of becoming one. She was already a postpartum doula, and she's one of the childbirth educators running antenatal classes down in Hawke's Bay. And yeah, she needed three mums to be at their births and work with them leading up to the birth to get her qualifications. And so I met with her and we were talking about that, and I started saying to her, like, I really want to have this natural birth, but I'm concerned about this particular midwife. I also know that this midwife, she doesn't do home births. I don't know her reasoning for it, but it was just not a thing that she would offer. And I thought to myself, well, I started learning, I would really like to look into a home birth, but I was like, well, my midwife doesn't do that, so I won't do that. And I'll just leave it there. And it was talking to the doula, she was kind of like, well, no, you need to remember, like, this is your birth. Like, if any, like, you don't need to change your birth to fit what she does. And she told me that it is actually a common thing in first-time mum to change your midwife, which had not occurred to me at all. It just kind of, it almost wasn't in my nature to do that. I felt quite bad if I had this midwife for, at this point, I was 19, 20 weeks pregnant. Oh, no, sorry. I was almost 30 weeks pregnant. Yeah, I was almost 30 weeks pregnant. And I just thought, I can't really do that. Like, I just didn't feel great about it. But she said, well, just talk about it, just think about it, maybe start researching some other midwives and just see if any of these suit, like, what you want out of your birth, if there's anyone you gel with, and just have a think about it. So I went away, started looking at more into midwives, and the more I did that, I was like, okay, no, this actually is something I need to do. So I called my first midwife and I just said, I'm actually looking at having a home birth. I'm aware this isn't something that you offer. And she was straight away like, no, like, that's totally fine. We can get you another midwife, like, absolutely. And so then I instantly felt better. And she actually recommended another lady who does specialize in home birth. And I ended up looking into her, and that was who I got. So from that point, it was all kind of set. I just had to do some to convince Quinn a little bit on the home birth idea. He wasn't 100% keen on it at first, but he came around to it. And yeah, then it started from that 30-week mark. It was kind of like I had done very general research about labor and whatnot and what to expect up until that mark. And then from the 30 weeks onwards, my research became very heavily around home birth and preparing myself for that.
Amazing. Very cool. And were you doing anything in preparation for like birth or the sort of postpartum period, like antenatal expressing or raspberry leaf tea, perineal massage, any of those types of things?
All of the above. I tried a lot. Yeah, I had the raspberry leaf tea that I had from your store, which was amazing. Became very just had that constantly going.
Yeah.
We did the antenatal expressing, which was a really exciting thing for me. I had breast implants. How long ago? What are we in now? About a long time ago. When I was 19, I had breast implants. And so it was always a bit of a, we just didn't think I would be able to breastfeed. Mm. And so when I was able to just even get like colostrum and do all that, that was just really exciting and a really good sign that maybe I would be able to. What else did I do? Yes, we did the perineal massage. That was a good time. No, not really, but Quinn.
Yeah,
I made Quinn do that and he wasn't really too keen. I've got some hilarious photos of his facials while that was happening, but he did it. I was like, no, because he just couldn't understand it. He's like, why would I want to, like, why would I want to stretch out down there? Like, da, 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 da. And I'm like, no, I'm like, it's a muscle. Like, if you're going to play a rugby game or whatever, you stretch beforehand so that you don't hurt your muscles. I was like, this is the same thing. I was like, I just need to, like, stretch it down there so that it's, like, in pristine condition for it. He's like, okay. So, yeah, he got on board and we did that. I did so many different things. Did all the dates, did lots of things.
Yeah, amazing. Cool. And did your labour end up starting spontaneously? Do you want to talk us through what happened there, how far along you were, and then into your birth story?
Yeah, amazing. So it was, my due date was the 13th of August, and I believe the 12th of August was a full moon. And I'm not really, I'm into a lot of things, but like the moon isn't really something I'm like so into. But I loved the idea of giving birth on a full moon. And that was something I'd kind of started thinking about a few months beforehand. And I was like, no, I'm going to like really try and manifest this. Like I really, really want this. To me, it just felt quite special. And then I remember, when was it? On the 11th of August. So the night prior, and the moon was getting all looking quite beautiful and full, and I was in the kitchen making dinner and I started like talking and just thought, it sounds so funny, and Quinn just laughed at me when I told him this. I started like talking to the moon, like, please, like, bring me my baby, like, tomorrow, like, blah, 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 like, I really want this. I remember texting like Ellie, my the sister-in-law, being like, oh, I wish I had some crystals, like, I just need to, like, I really need to manifest this. And then so yeah, that all happened. And then, what was it? So that was a Thursday on the 11th of August, and I'd had a beauty appointment, and I remember I was talking to the lady there, and I'd said, I've tried so many things to do the natural induction, but I hadn't tried the spicy meal. I was like, one of the podcasts I'd listened to, they said, like, it was a midwife saying, please don't do the spicy meal. Like, it's not pretty for anyone, like, if you've just had a hot curry and then you go into birth, like, no one wants to deal with that. So I was like, I'm not going to do it. But my beautician was like, oh, well, might have just been a coincidence. But she's like, I had a really spicy meal the night before and I went into labor the next morning. And I was like, okay, well, we're having like chili mince that night for dinner. So I was like, well, it's not going to be too hard. I'll just add in a bit of extra chili and like just go with that. The Thursday night, I had some chili and it was more like chili flakes with a side of chili. Like there was so... I'd put curry powder in the chili and then it was just covered in chili flakes. And at the time I just thought, well, this is not doing anything. I'm like, this isn't hot enough. That's just not it. And then again, might've been coincidence. Next morning, Friday morning, I woke up and my stomach was very sore, like very upset. And I had to go to the bathroom. But pretty much straight away for after that, I started getting these like period-like cramps. And that was about 8 o'clock in the morning. And I went out for coffee with my mum at nine o'clock in the morning. And I said to her, like, oh, I've been getting these like period cramps and they already feel like I wasn't timing them, but when they'd start, I just look at the clock. And if it was like 9 o'clock, I'm like, okay, Then I'd look at the clock 5 minutes later when they started, and it's been 5 minutes, and they just kept coming every 5 minutes. And it was only like a light, really, really, really light cramp. Mm. And I messaged my doula, and she said, like, I'm getting these light cramps. Like, could this be anything? And she's like, oh, it could be. She's like, stay active, go for a few little walks throughout the day, but then also make sure you're rested, because if this is labor, you want to make sure you are rested. Mm. I was like, okay. So I went for a walk in the morning, and then I went for a walk with a lady from our antenatal class at around lunchtime with her. And again, it was still just happening every 5 minutes, but really light cramps. And I had heard in a few different podcasts about women who started getting cramps, and then they just kind of went away, and then it would happen again the next day. And so in the back of my mind, I just kept thinking, well, that could be what's happening. So don't get too excited and just go with it. It ended up being a very full-on day, lots of walking. I got an appointment with my acupuncturist, and she did some induction points, which was really cool.
Yeah.
And then...
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
The cramps were getting a little bit more intense throughout the day, but just more noticeable. And then I went out for dinner with Ellie that night, and I remember sitting at dinner, and I hadn't told her anything, and I was sitting there, and I'd have to be like, kind of have to grip my teeth a little bit when they would come on. So by that point, they had got a little bit more noticeable. And then I got home at around 8:39, and I messaged my doula, and I just said, okay, they are getting a bit more full on now. What do you think, like, I should do? And she just said, well, why don't you just start timing them and just see how far apart they are? And then she's like, and then try and get some sleep. And about an hour after timing them, they were still coming. They were going like anywhere between 5, 6, or 7 minutes. And I was starting to sit on my ball. Oh, yeah, I should say as well, Quinn was at a rugby game. So I remember I dropped him off at like the Magpies, which is a local team here. Yeah. I dropped him off at that, and I said to him, like, just so you know, like, I've been getting cramps, like, I could be going into labor, so, like, don't have a big night. And he was like, yeah, that's fine. And so he came home then at maybe like 10 or 11, and by that point, I remember thinking, like, I'm not going to be able to fall asleep through these. Like, I was having to, like, curl my toes a little bit. And I was like, they were just quite uncomfortable. And I was like, I'm not sleeping through this feeling. And so he came home a little bit tipsy. And he's like, do you want me to fill up the pool? And so, I'm sorry, not fill up the pool, but we'd had a pool at home that the midwives had given us. And so we blew that up. And that was probably the first time, like, I didn't have any fear or any nervousness towards the idea of birth. I was more excited than anything. I just didn't have any fear. And as soon as he blew up the pool, I remember I just felt something in me, like, I became quite nervous. Like, I had this feeling in my chest, like, okay, this is happening now.
Yeah.
And I remember I got a little bit snappy because he was kind of being a bit funny, and like, he started getting in the pool and pretending to be like in labor, and I was like, get out of it, and getting all like don't wake me up right now. And then he then went to bed just after 11, and I did lie in bed for a little bit, and I really tried to sleep. And about midnight, I just knew, I was like, okay, no, this isn't happening. I'd rather just be downstairs. I had set up a really beautiful space in our lounge with all the lights and candles and music and diffusers and all this stuff, and I had all these different props to help me. And I just thought, well, I'm going to go downstairs now, and I'm going to use the TENS machine that I had and just see how we go. And so that started at, that was at midnight when I got down there. And then I spent the whole night nicely wide awake. I did manage, I think, between maybe 2 and 3 a.m. my body just really wanted to lie down, and I lay down and would kind of doze off between contractions. And then as soon as I'd wake, like one would start, I'd turn on the TENS machine and let that go. And then that just kind of went on for about an hour. At around like 5 a.m., I remember my doula said to me, like, well, give me an hour's notice on like when you need me there. She's like, it'll take me about an hour to get there. So yeah. And I remember, like, I was really conflicted in my head because I was like, I was quite happy just being there by myself. I actually quite liked being there by myself, but I had no gauge on how I was kind of progressing, like if this was going to happen really quickly or if it was going to be a really slow process. So I thought, well, if it's going to take her an hour, like, I don't know. I felt like I had progressed quite a bit in the hour leading up to that. So I thought, well, who knows like where I'll be in an hour. So I thought, okay, well, maybe do just come over. So she got there at around 6. And I remember I told Quinn, like, Jess is going to be here soon. And so he came downstairs as well at the same time. And so we were all just sitting in the lounge. And I felt a little bit silly because I was like, oh, I could still be doing this by myself. I didn't really need anyone else there and I didn't really want to waste anyone's time. And so we were just kind of all sitting in the lounge and they would, Jess was helping me through some of the contractions, like doing different things with me. And then I remember I was sitting on a chair in the lounge at around 6:30 in the morning and Quinn just walked over to me and like he touched me on the shoulder. And then as soon as he did that, it just felt like this fountain went off underneath me. And so that was my waters breaking, which was really cool. And so I think leading up to that point, I still had this in the back of my mind, like, am I in labor? Like, is this just going to stop?
Yeah.
And then once that happened, I was like, okay, no, this is it. This is happening. And yeah, from there, well, the contractions did start to get a little bit more uncomfortable as they went by. I was just kind of moving around the room a lot. I had my favorite position was definitely like being, I'd kneel down at the end of the couch and I had all these cushions up on the couch and I leaned over them and just kind of like breathed into that. I had done a lot of breath work throughout the pregnancy I'd done a lot of Pilates and a lot of yoga and then my own like meditation. So my breath work was the biggest thing in my labor. Mm-hmm. And so that was my main focus, just constantly breathing through it. And then again, like my midwife had said to me, like to only to message her when my waters had broken or if the pain was like unbearable. And so I messaged her when my waters had broken and she was like, okay, well, I'll come around in about an hour or so. And she came over at 8:30 in the morning. And by that point, I felt pretty uncomfortable. And she said to me, do you want to have a vaginal check? See how like dilated you are. And I undenied about it. And then I thought, well, actually, no, like I do. I want to know how far along I am and kind of what I'm working, like what pace I'm working at. I think that's just the way my brain works. I knew I'd rather know than just be left wondering. And so I did get her to check me and she said that I was 3 centimeters dilated. And I was like, okay. Like to me, I'd been down in this lounge since midnight. And then that was 8:30 in the morning. I was like, oh, okay. I thought I would have been a little bit further along by that point, but it is what it is. And I knew in the back of my mind, like my mum had had really long labors with both my brother and I. And I kind of figured that I'd heard that can be a little bit of like a hereditary thing. And so I did picture of myself that I would be having a longer labor. And so, yeah, when she came in 8:30, I was 3 centimeters dilated. I was like, okay, not as far along as I would like to be, but it is what it is. And she did tell me that, she's like, well, okay, once you get to around 4 to 5 centimeters, it tends to go pretty quick from there. So she said, all right, well, I'm going to go now. I'll leave. Message me again when your contractions are like on top of one another, like no rest between them, they're just ongoing. So I was like, okay. Once she left, I remember saying to Jess, like, do you think I can get in the pool? Like I had gone a bit off the TENS machine, like it was great in the very beginning, and then after a while it was like some contractions the TENS machine I felt was helpful and sometimes it felt like it almost added to the uncomfortableness. So took off the Tim's machine and I said, do you think I could get in the pool?
Rebozo?
Like, we can do that. So they started filling up the pool for me, which was lovely. I think I had my mum, Quinn and the doula all like running back and forth, filling up pots and pans and all these different things going on. We got in the pool and that was amazing. And again, I just stayed really to myself. I remember sometimes like Quinn would touch me and I would just be like, no, like I don't want that. Like same as the TENS machine, like if he was putting tons of pressure on my back, sometimes it made it just feel worse and I wasn't into it. So I'd kind of tell him like, no, it's all right. I had my mum giving me cloths and we had some clary sage and like lavender on these like nice cold flannels, which was really nice. I was getting quite a bit of discomfort in my tailbone. And like, I remember I would have a contraction and the contraction would feel fine. I'd lay on my bum and had my knees up and I just kept swaying back and forth, like swaying my knees from side to side through a contraction and breathing and they felt fine. It was really, once the contraction kind of subsided, I would get this surge of discomfort through my tailbone. And that to me was the more uncomfortable part. And so we started, they started talking about maybe the baby was a little bit posterior against my spine. And so Jess was doing some things with like a bit of fabric. And she was like shaking my hips, trying to see if they could, that's the one. Was doing that to see if they could, that could help. And it did help sometimes. And then the pain in my tailbone would kind of come and go. But yeah, I just stayed really to myself. Time flew by really fast. Apparently someone left the tap on when they were filling up the pool and it started flooding in the lounge and I had no clue that was happening, so I didn't find that out until after the birth. So time went really, really fast. I really stuck to my breathing. I almost felt like as it got further along it became quite euphoric. Like between contractions, I would kind of doze off into a sleep and it almost felt like I was having these dreams and I was having these conversations with myself. And it was actually quite peaceful. And I find it really strange to look back on like some of these things that were happening because it felt like quite a respite from the labor. Like between the contractions, I would just doze off and I would feel completely at peace. And then suddenly another contraction would come back on. But the contractions still never felt like to me like they were getting closer together. Like they still felt like I had a little bit of time between them, but that might have been because I was dozing off. And then again, I just stuck to myself, wasn't really talking to anyone. And then I started getting like pressure in my bum, like they talked about, that can happen. But again, in my mind, I just thought, Inga, my midwife, was only here like a little while ago and she said I was only 3 centimeters, so I can't be like that. I didn't think I would be too far along and I still wasn't really in that much pain as such. It didn't feel like what I would think of being as like fully dilated or being in transition. But then so I was kind of stuck in my pool. I started getting this pressure in my bum. I didn't want to say anything because I didn't really think much of it. And then after a few, when that was happening, and I actually felt like I needed to like poo. I said to my doula, I was like, oh, I think I need to poo. And she, her eyes just lit up and she was like, what? Like, what? And I was like, oh yeah, I think like I'm just getting pressure there. And she was like, why didn't you, like, she's like, how long has that been happening? And I was like, oh, I don't know, a few, like it's been going on a little while. She's like, why did you not tell anyone? And I was like, I didn't want to like cause concern or think like, I didn't think I would be that far along. So I was like, no, I didn't want to tell anyone. So she like said to Quinn, like, okay, call the midwife, tell her what's happening. Quinn went and called the midwife and she apparently was like, why did no one call me earlier? Like, so they were all about like, what? And then they were like, yeah, Claudia didn't say anything. She didn't tell us like this was happening. And then before my midwife had even arrived, I started, my body started pushing on its own, which was amazing. Like I'd been going through a contraction and kind of like swaying back and forth in the pool. And then suddenly, and like how everyone talks about how if you're vomiting and like you get this reflex to go like outwards, or go up and out through your mouth, it was like that same reflex, like suddenly I would just get this surge of power going downwards and my body would just like this big like, I don't know, convulsion kind of thing. And it was really amazing. And then Inga turned up and she asked to check me. She checked me and she said, yep, you're 10 centimetres dilated and the baby's like right there. And she was like, okay, on your next contraction, I want you to push. And I had done, I remember I said to my doula, I was like, can you go find this playlist on my phone? And can you go put this one on? I only had like 20 songs in this playlist. And I thought any one of those songs was really special and beautiful. And I thought, I'd love for the baby to come out to one of these songs. And the way that the midwife was talking about it was like, this baby is going to come any minute. I remember she said, it's like, oh, I need to go call the second midwife. As being a home birth, you have to have two midwives there. She's like, I'm just going to go call the second midwife, but I do have a feeling she's not going to be here in time for the birth. My midwife asked the doula, like, can you be the timekeeper? Can you see what time this baby comes out? So in my mind, I'm thinking like, oh my gosh, this baby is coming soon. Like, it's going to come out to one of these beautiful songs. And then when I started pushing, I was doing the whole, how everyone talks, like, breathe your baby out. So I was doing all that. And I did that for a few contractions.
Yeah.
And it all felt, I really loved that feeling. I think because there's so much tension that kind of gets built up in your body through labor and having these contractions. It was so nice to be able to kind of like release some of that energy. Yeah. And that's what I felt with those, with pushing. And that was all really nice. But I remember after a few contractions, she said to me, okay, like, I know you've done, so as my midwife said to me, I know you've done amazingly with your breathing all through the labor. And she's like, and I can see you're trying to do the same now with pushing, but I really need you to actually push. And so I was like, okay. She's like, it's just that you're not, I wasn't really getting much progress with how I was doing it. And so she did say to me, I need you to push. Push into your bum, like that whole thing, which I was a bit gutted about because I was like, oh, that's really what you learn like not to do. But I could kind of feel it in myself that like I needed to put a little bit more effort and the energy into this getting the baby up. And pretty much that was about one p.m. when the midwife came over and checked me and I was pushing. And really, it wasn't until 6:15 that night that Elodie was born. So it was a long pushing phase. And after about 2.5 hours of pushing, my contractions had slowed down to the point they'd pretty much actually stopped. I think because I was just quite exhausted. So I hadn't slept all the night prior. I hadn't really ate even much through labor. I did have a whole bunch of snacks there, but I just didn't really want any of them. I had a few bits of like sugar here and there.
Yeah.
And so yeah, my contractions really just stopped. And I remember I almost started faking my contractions because I really just wanted to keep pushing. I would like, we'd all be lying there and then suddenly I'd be like, oh, another one's coming on, and they'd all like grab my arms and legs and whatnot, and then we'd just go for it. And then but nothing was actually happening. And I told them, they would have known, they know what they're looking for. But I said, I was like, oh no, my contractions aren't happening anymore. And we started talking about, okay, they had said to me, well, typically at this point in time, you would be going to a hospital. If you were in a hospital situation and you'd been pushing for this amount of time, they would be looking into intervening to get the baby out. And I thought about it really logically. It was quite good. By this point, I think my labor had been so beautiful and so zen, and the pushing part was really like just a mission for me. And I felt between pushing, I felt really normal. And so I was able to have these like logical conversations with them and just be like, okay, well, if I go to the hospital, what are they going to do? And they said to me, well, these are your kind of options. They might be looking more into doing a Ventouse if you go to the hospital. And I should also just add in, they were checking Elodie's heart rate every couple of minutes. And the reason why I was able to stay at home was her heart rate was just perfect the entire time. Like, she wasn't in any distress. And I was more than willing to just keep going. I didn't feel uncomfortable. I wasn't in a lot of pain or anything. And so, and they knew that it was quite important to me to just, like, if I could really pull, keep going with a home birth, like, it was important to me that I really just gave it everything I could. So yeah, at this 2.5 hour mark, they did talk to me about what could happen, and we just agreed, like, let's just keep going. And they had all these different positions that we could try, and I was slowly making progress, and they did believe, like, yep, no, this baby is going to come out, like, you can push this baby out. So just keep going with me. And I remember, must have been like an hour or so past after that, and I went into the bathroom with Quinn. Like, I kept going to the bathroom a bit, just because whenever I'd sit on the toilet, my body, it would almost like bring back the contractions. I think just that sitting position was really great. And I remember saying to Quinn a few times, like, oh, I actually am getting, like, pretty exhausted now. And they kept saying, like, push as if you're angry, and, like, get all these things out. And I just remember thinking, like, I'm not angry. Like, I didn't have much more energy to give. Like, they wanted more from me, and I just didn't feel like I had that energy anymore.
Yeah.
And so I kind of said, like, oh, like, if it's going to be easier, like, for everybody else, then if it's like, yeah, maybe we should just go to hospital and just do that here. Like, I'm still proud of where I've got to at this point. Like, I won't be disappointed. I might have been, I'm not sure, but I was like, I'm really proud of where I've got to at this point, and if I need to go to hospital to get the baby out, if that's the best option, then let's do it. But the midwives just kept being like, no, like, we do think that this is going to happen. And I think in the end, it kind of became a bit of like an ego thing for me, that I just became determined. Yeah. I'm like, okay, well, now we've just got to get it done. Like, we've come this far. Like, let's just do it. And it was just a mission. And so I remember near the end of these long pushing hours, I was in the toilet with Quinn there, and I got a little contraction and started pushing. And then I remember Quinn, like, yelled out to the midwife, being like, dude, like, the head was coming. And so she came in and she checked, and she was like, okay, we need to get you off this toilet. Like, I don't particularly want you to give birth here, because it was quite cold in the bathroom. And she wanted to be able to see what was happening to prevent any tearing. And so we moved back into the lounge, and we tried another position that was kind of, I was lying on the ground a little bit on my side, and we were doing that. And then the progress just kind of stopped, like the head wasn't coming any further. And so what we decided to do in the very end was we decided to mock a little, or make up a toilet in the lounge. So Quinn sat on the edge of the couch with his legs, like, spread apart, and I sat between his legs as if I was sitting on a toilet seat. And it was all, I've got the most amazing photos of this. So, like, I'm,
I bet you do. Yeah,
I'm like stark naked. He's sitting behind me. We've got my mum on one side, doula on the other, and then the two midwives in front of me. And we started doing that and was making a lot of progress. I put a lot of, I'm really grateful that we had that position with Quinn, because by that point, like, I just really didn't have much energy, and he was putting in as much energy into the pushing as I was. And I don't think I could have got it. I don't think I could have done it without the amount of energy that he put into it. Also, another thing that helped is they gave me a spoonful of honey, and then we mixed 3 spoonfuls of honey with some hot water, and that gave me a really good, like, sugar boost near the end. I really liked that. And then after a little while, we were making a lot of progress with this pushing on the couch, but they did kind of say to me in the end, okay, well, her head was asymclitic presentation. So instead of her chin being tucked down to her chest, it was a little bit like that, but her head was tilted off to the right. And so instead of pushing out like a normal, the diameter of what you need to get, like the 10 centimeters, the way her head was, it was adding about an extra 2 centimeters on how much I needed to push out. And she was stuck. I had a ridge in my perineum that she was stuck behind. And so they said to me, okay, well, you can keep going a few more pushes, but I think we might need a little bit of extra help here. If you're okay with getting an episiotomy. And at that point I was like, yep, just do whatever you need to do. I went through those few pushes that they gave me as like a last attempt, but didn't really make too much more progress. And so then, they gave me a little nip And after that, she came out full head and body all in one push. Then we got our Elodie, and she got brought up on my
knee. Amazing.
Beautiful.
Oh, that is beautiful. Isn't it crazy how, like, because I had a totally different birth to you, but similar experience with the episiotomy, where you've been pushing for literally hours, and you're like, I ended up thinking, like, there's no freaking way this baby's coming out of me. I've been just pushing with, like, all of my might. And then they do this little episiotomy, and then your baby just slides on out.
I know. I'm like, oh. And I've been to a pelvic floor physio since, and she was kind of like, you maybe could have done with that episiotomy a little bit sooner.
Being at home, did you have, like, did they give you a local injection before they did the episiotomy, or how did that happen?
Yeah, they gave me a local anesthesia down there, and so I didn't feel them do the cut or anything like that, which was quite nice. And then they had explained to me, because I'd been pushing for so long, I really wanted to do the delayed cord clamping and all that. But I can't remember exactly what the reason was for, but I had been pushing for so long, and so they were quite scared of me. Oh, I don't know what it was. Something to do with blood. I should know this. I've just blanked. But pretty much they gave me the injection straight away to for my body to expel the placenta. Just, I think they were scared of me bleeding. We didn't get to do the delayed cord clamping, but at the end of it, I was kind of, there was so much to my birth that had all gone to plan.
Totally.
That to not get that at the end, I was like, that is fine. We're okay with that.
Cool. And so what happened from there? Did they do, did they stitch you up at home? And do you know how many stitches you ended up needing? What happened there?
Oh, I'd love to know how many stitches I got, but I definitely got the stitches. I was still on top of Quinn, and then Elodie was on my chest. We stayed there while they stitched me up, and I remember, I think Quinn put it, like, Quinn's a very fit guy, but I think he had put so much energy into the pushing at the end, like the way that our arms were intertwined with one another and how we pushed together, he ended up pretty much like pulling a muscle in his core, so he was really uncomfortable. Not that he would complain in the state that I was in, but he was pretty uncomfortable being squished underneath me. And then we lay there for a while they stitched me up. Again, I'd love to know how many stitches I had, but we had the stitches. And then we just lay there for a little bit and waited for her. She stayed on my chest for a bit, and then she did start to do the little crawl over to breastfeed, which was really beautiful. And we did all that and stayed there for a little while, and then we kept her on my chest while I gracefully hopped off Quinn so he could have a little relax. And then she stayed on my chest for a while, and we did the first feed, and I waited for her to kind of pop off by herself, and then after that they took her away to do like the measurements and weighed her and checked her and did all those things, and then Quinn was able to have skin to skin with her afterwards as well.
Yeah, amazing. That sounds so beautiful. I just, I absolutely love your birth story. It sounds just like the dream.
It was so, so lovely. Like, I know it was a little bit long, but it was so beautiful. And then afterwards we were all just able to kind of sit in the lounge, and just my mum was with me, which was really beautiful. And I should say as well, my mum had what she would describe as quite traumatic births with both my brother and I. So when I first said to her I was looking into a home birth, she was just like, oh, but like, why would you do that? Like, what if you need this and this and this? Yeah. And I just kind of boxed it out and said, like, no, like, your fear is not mine and whatnot. Then when she came down to Hawke's Bay, because she's not from here, I did ask her in the end, like, well, actually, if you'd like to be at the birth, then I'd really love you to be there. She thought about it for a bit, and she realized, like, no, she needs to put her fear aside and just be there for me. And I was so glad she was there. So after our birth, she just sat with me, and Quinn was there, and the two midwives, and we were talking with them a lot, and Jess the doula, and then Quinn's mum came around, and we all just sat in the lounge, and it was so beautiful. And like my mum and I went upstairs, and mum showered me, and it was like this full full circle thing with mum that was really beautiful.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just nice. And then we were able to talk talk back on the birth, and I'd be like, oh, I remember this part, like da da da. It was just so lovely, and the midwives were really amazing, and they told me that they said my birth was very exceptional. They said like that they'd had an experience to birth like that before, especially with how long I was pushing for and pushing without contractions, which in the back of my mind I knew at the time. I was like, because I'd seen a pelvic floor physio prior to the birth, and I knew, I was like, oh, surely pushing without contractions is not great for your pelvic floor. So I was a little bit worried about that, but no, everything was really good, and had a lot to be proud of with the birth, which was nice.
Amazing. Very cool. And what happened from there? Obviously, being at home, you don't have to go anywhere. How did the next couple of hours play out? And then, what did the next few days and weeks look like for you as a new mum?
So everyone kind of stuck around at home for a couple of hours. We all just sat there and talked. And it was pretty crazy, the fact that you give birth to this little tiny human, and then it was just Quinn and I at the end of the night, like left with her in a little co-sleeper, and we just couldn't believe it. So they all left. We had our first night together, which was really beautiful. She woke up a few different times, like crying, and I know they do their little like gurgles with mucus that's still in their chest, so that's a little bit scary at some points, but. It was really lovely, and then the midwife turned up first thing in the morning, and I think I was still on quite a bit of like an adrenaline buzz, and so I felt like I could still do everything. And we had all this mess downstairs. There's a pool, there's all these towels everywhere, like there was a lot going on in the lounge, and so I kind of started like cleaning all that up, and Quinn was amazing and cleaned up a lot of it, and parents turned up and they helped clean, and it definitely, in hindsight, I probably could have rested a lot more in those first few days, but you're just running on such adrenaline that it does feel possible to kind of keep going. But the first few days were really nice. I didn't know any different not being in the hospital, but it was beautiful having our midwife come over each day, and she was really helpful. But I kept thinking, I was like, wow, it must be really nice to be in a hospital and have like support there, especially like through the night with feeding and whatnot. So that was okay. And then it was actually 2 days later, so when Elodie was about 48 hours old, we did end up in Skibo with her, and that was just her second day. Her first day she was wide awake and she was feeding a lot, and then the second day she just wanted to sleep the entire day. And we didn't really think much of it. We just thought she's a newborn and she's just been quite awake the day prior, so she's probably just really tired. But it did make it really hard to feed her, and she wasn't waking up to be fed. So we had to, because I had expressed colostrum beforehand, the midwife said to just to get something in her. So we were giving her colostrum through a syringe, but she just wasn't keeping any of it down. And then the other day, and just wasn't waking up, and then started doing some funny little poos. And again, I didn't think too much of it. It was like a Monday night, I think. It was all through the Monday we had the funny day of feeding and whatnot. Yeah. And then that night, just before we went to bed, I was like, oh, I'm just going to text my midwife and just explain to her how the day's been going. And even though we were seeing her the very next morning, but I was like, I'm just going to let her know. I'm not asking her anything, but I'll just let her know. So I sent her this text, and she called me about 20 minutes later, and she said, she's like, oh, I'm just going to call the hospital and see if they do want you to come in. She's like, just be prepared that they might want to see you. Just as she's not keeping anything down. Like they want to be careful with babies. So I was like, oh, okay. So she called the hospital and the pediatrics, and they said, yes, do come in. So we ended up at hospital at around just before midnight, and as soon as we got in there, they did all these tests on her, and they decided they wanted to put her in Skibo. I think it was more so there wasn't any room in the pediatric ward, and just with how hospitals are at the moment and really crazy busy, they really wanted to get her out of the emergency department during COVID, and we've got this 48-hour-old baby. They just needed to get her out of there. So they found a room in Skibo, which was quite unlikely for that to happen, but we ended up there, and it was quite fortunate that we did. When we first turned up to hospital, she wasn't, all her bloods were quite normal, her oxygen levels were quite normal, but she really, really quickly deteriorated through the night. And so it was quite, they had her in a little, they first had kept her just in a little bed in Skibo, and then they ended up putting her in one of the incubators. And we were there for 2 nights, and it just, they suspected that she had an infection. Her blood suggested there was an infection. They never figured out, well, they never really concluded what the infection was, but like how babies can go down quite quickly, but they do bounce back very, very fast. So once we were able to start actually breastfeeding her, which was about 24 hours in, she just bounced back really well. And we were able to be discharged on my birthday, which was nice. So we spent the first part, I had my hospital, what was it, hospital breakfast with my birthday breakfast. And then, we got discharged that night. And then, ever since then, she's been good. So we just had that little time in Skibo, which the nurses were amazing. I almost, not that I enjoyed that experience, it was really upsetting, and that was also the time when my milk was coming in, so I was just sitting there in the ward like sobbing that first night. But we did learn a lot being in Skibo, like just being around other nurses who were lovely, and they all had different ways of doing things, but we definitely took some things away from it, which was nice.
Yeah, it can be really tough having a baby in special care, or like, you know, just anything unexpected, I think, in those first few days and weeks with a newborn can be really, really challenging for sure.
Yeah, they tried to force feed some like formula milk into her, and she just wasn't, that was probably the worst experience that we'd had. Mm. Like, that was not pleasant at all. We had both of us in tears. And so they actually stopped. Mm. They started doing that, and then they quickly stopped when they realised it wasn't going very well. It was a very upsetting time, but then it started bouncing back. It was.
And how did you go when you went back home? And I know she's 8 weeks old now, so how have you found, the adjustment to motherhood, and how's your breastfeeding journey going? And, what does that all look like?
It was really lovely when we came home. We'd had a lot of visitors in those first 48 hours before we ended up in hospital. And after that, we kind of just slowed it down a little bit and just said, like, no, we just need to relax. I was probably still running on a bit of adrenaline, so I just needed to try chill out a lot more. I set myself, I had to give myself permission to just do nothing and just be in bed with her. And that was really beautiful. And then since then, she's been a really, I think she's been quite an easy baby for the most part. I just say that, like, I've been able to sleep quite well. Like, she does still, her night times are still really good. She wakes like 2 to 3 times a night, but I get some nice like 3 hour stretches between then, and her first sleep tends to be pretty good. Like, she might sleep 4 or 5 hours in the night at first. I do feel quite rested, and then any days where any nights where it's been quite a tough night, I just kind of, again, give myself permission to just do nothing the next day and relax. Our feeding journey has been, a journey. I think about a week in, my milk just really, a week in, my milk suddenly kind of dried up a little bit. And we weren't really sure what was happening, and we got a lactation consultant, and it was, Elodie wasn't latching very well, and so she wasn't stimulating the milk, and then my body just kind of stopped producing it. So we had to then go on a little bit of a mission to pump and build it all back up, and it did. So I have struggled a little bit with supply in the last couple months, where it has dropped down a lot, and then we kind of have to build it back up, and I don't know if that's because of my breast implant or if it's just the way it is, but we're just going with it and taking each feed as it comes. What else? Motherhood has been amazing. I was saying to my mum the other day, I'm like, when they come out, you love them because they're your baby and you've made this and it's so beautiful. But my gosh, as you get to know them more as the weeks go by and they start showing a little bit more personality, like, you really do love them. Like, it's a different kind of love as you get to know them a little bit more and know which we're at the moment. I just think she's amazing. And it's made me have a whole lot more respect for my own mother, which has been really lovely. And I think I say, like, I'm like, motherhood to me, it feels like it's easy and hard at the same time. Like, some of it is just so natural. So that's like the easy part, but then it's hard because it is such a adjustment. Like, your life really does change a lot. We're just rolling with it. Some days are a little bit harder. Right now, she's had her immunization just the other week, and it's kind of thrown her off a little bit. So we're dealing with that. I just have to keep telling myself, like, this will pass, and it's not going to be like this forever. Like, she might be only through this phase for a week, and then we might be onto something else. But you just really got to roll with it.
Yes, for sure. I feel like I'm almost 3 years in, and I still feel that exact same way. Just rolling with it.
You just got to wing it, eh?
Totally. Exactly. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Claude, for coming on the podcast and sharing your story with me. I've really loved talking to you, and I know that there'll be so many different parts of your story that listeners sort of take away and either relate to or learn something from. So just super grateful that you were willing to join me. So thank you.
No, thank you so much. And I really am grateful to have this platform to talk about it. I was a little bit scared to talk about, like, the pushing part, just because I know in the medical side of things, like, you wouldn't usually be pushing for that long, and some people might disagree with the fact that we stayed at home that whole time, but just kind of want people to know that, like, birth is safe, and there's nothing to be, like, fearful of, and knowledge is power, and if you can just, it's such an empowering thing, and it's just nothing to be afraid of, really.
Thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales. I hope you have enjoyed it. And another reminder that this week's episode was brought to you by Your Birth Project. It's everything you need to create your best birth, regardless of what kind of birth you want to have. It is inclusive of all births, so go and check out Your Birth Project at Your Birth Project on Instagram or www.yourbirthproject.com. Look forward to bringing you another awesome episode next week.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.